Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this creature is the bringer of death. You will never eat. You will never sleep. You will never stop.
Damn it, I made that thing. We're going to hear it. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. Come on in to Eerie House. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Hey, the water's great. Come on in. Danny Binkley for the weirdest, really bad movie. And it's almost cooperated. We're getting closer to normal on the Blog Talk Radio.
Yep. So here we are on a Sunday. Who knew? Who knew? Thanks, Blog Talk. But that's okay. It just gives you a bonus day of Blog Talk Radio. And we're wrapping up our weekend of spending time with Mummy.
That's right. Should always spend time with your mummy if you can.
That's right. Brew a little tea from those Tana leaves, which for some reason make mummies come to life in the Universal films. And, really cool stuff for you tonight. A little WCRS soundstage coming up for you. And Dave will tell us all about that.
Interesting tale there, and also a World Adventurers Club syndicated from the early 1930s, early radio network, barely in its infancy, and this was a syndicated program, so it's unique. I looked over the list. I think we've only done one of these, a zombie one, before, so it's... should be a fun time listening to another World Adventurers Club.
Yeah. And,
I was just going to say, you were mentioning earlier that you didn't think that there really, in a sense, were a whole lot of mummy movies out there.
I guess there were more than I thought. I mean, you do have five or so Universal Pictures. The Mummy was supposed to be in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, but somehow got written out. there's been other follow-ups, though. Of course, there's the Christopher Lee version, and then, of course, you got the robot versus the Aztec Mummy and all the Brandon Fraser remixes. There's been a handful.
There. Yeah, when you look at it, as a mummy in a mix of horror, it's not too bad. When you look at it as a mix of all movies out there, all genres and stuff, yeah, it kind of gets left behind. But if you look at it in horror, then it's represented fairly well.
Yep. But still one of the best classic Universal monsters, so hey... He's still got to be something of a fave. And, of course, we have radio stories for you tonight. And have we had, Dave, have we had the World Adventurers Club before?
Oh,
I'm here.
One time. When I looked over the list, there are 32 of them that were made and syndicated. There was only one that we've used so far. And I'm looking for it. Must have been earlier in there. And I'm looking over here. I can't understand why I haven't gone to some more of these. But there was one. There's one about zombies in here, and that's one that we have used. But there's only one, and I'm thinking that was in our first year, considering we're, you know, over halfway through our third year and all these wonderful stories that we've shared. That's just, oh, there it is, Dead Man Walk. It was the one just before before this one, episode number 28. That's the only one that I know of that we have shared here on Erie House Radio. And it's really kind of neat because these go back to 1932. They were a syndicated series, 15-minute series, and so many of those early programs were, even the Witch's Tale, a lot of them to make a complete story, they were 15-minute episodes, and to make a complete story, they had to do it in two different nights. I don't know whether because the resources weren't there to really work on half-hour programs, or they didn't think people would sit there for half hour at a time, but so many of your programs, and it could have been a resource thing, because I'm thinking, you know, when you were early television shows, a lot of those also weren't 15-minute programs. The original Spike Jonze show was only a 15-minute program. I know I have a friend who said he used to watch that. He used to run home from school to be able to catch that Spike Jonze show because they were only 15 minutes long. So I'm thinking maybe it was just a resource thing at that time.
Could be. But Tonight's Tale is a good one. Living Mummy.
Yep, it fits right in with our tale. The setting, as I have it down here, is the plush and highly decorated World Adventurers Club, where members relax and regale each other with their exploits in distant and exotic places. One can imagine that Phineas Fogg's Explorers Club in London might have been the model, and our World Adventures Club in San Francisco, perhaps, the next door to the hotel where once stayed the man called Paladin. One can imagine gentlemen with brandy and cigars reclining in overstuffed leather couches and chairs, the room lined with mahogany bookcases, tall red velvet-draped windows throw dim sunlight on walls covered with strange masks and hand weapons, while statues in the corner stare out between potted palm fronds. There's even an explorer's quartet to sing of adventure in a wild world that still lay in wait in 1932. In fact, alternate titles for the shows were Adventures in the Strange Land as well as The Adventurers Club. So these are just the kind of...
I feel like I was there, man. It was a good read.
But it was first aired on radio station KFWB in Los Angeles. And as it says there, unfortunately, the names of the many talents who created the show are lost. Lost like the ruin in the steamy jungles of the time. But they don't do a good job of giving credits at the end of the show. And there's a lot of music in here, and I'm assuming that's time in there to throw in local commercial spots. So when you think of the production in here too, and thinking that this was back in 1932, I think it's pretty amazing production values from back then.
And I'm looking forward to hearing this one. Do we have a broadcast date on this?
We have the 1932, and then this was the 29th program that was syndicated of the series. 29th of the 32.
So sometime in late summer of 1932, here's The Living Mummy from the World Adventurers Club.
Thank you. Adventurers Club greet you once again. As you may know, this unique organization is composed solely of brave, intrepid adventurers and explorers. Only those who have passed through some thrilling or blood-curdling experience may qualify for membership. Ladies and gentlemen, the World Adventurers Club.
Gentlemen, the meeting will come to order.
What's on the carpet for tonight, Mr. Chairman?
Something unusual, I can promise you. Allow me to present the guest of the evening, Mr. Arnold Manning.
How do you do, Mr. Manning?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
Mr. Manning, have you that little story prepared for us?
I believe so.
Very well, then. Proceed.
It so happened that a few years ago I was in Arabia in search of the tomb of an Egyptian king, Ptolemy Ray by name. After many weary weeks of searching in the terrific heat of the desert, my native boy and I stumbled upon the hidden tomb, near a grove of fantastic and gnarled fig trees. But imagine our surprise to find a band of fierce Arabs with their campfires gathered near the grove. I heard the beat of their drums and knew what they meant. They were driving away the evil spirits.
It is Mustafa Bey. It is better we go away and return later.
Why?
Well, Mustafa, he's a very bad man. He rob and steal.
Nonsense. I'll go speak to him. Wait here.
You are Mustafa Bey? May I ask what you are doing here?
You question me, Monsieur Manning? It is I who should question you.
You know me, then?
I have been watching you. So, you have found the hidden tomb?
Yes, after much hard work.
Excellent.
Why do you laugh?
It is that the joke seems to be on you, monsieur. If you will proceed to the tomb, you will observe that someone has been ahead of you.
What?
Come, I will show you.
Why, the stone door is moved back. The tomb is open. You did this?
I? No, Monsieur Manning. I would not enter that tomb for all the money in the world. But I am interested in what you will find within that tomb. I and my men will wait outside.
Do not enter, son. Come, we go quick.
No. But I am wondering what's inside that interests Mustafa. Hand me that flashlight. I'm going in.
Oh, please, sir. The evil spirit.
You'll go with me, Moreau. This Mustafa can do us no harm. We're not far from the village.
But I am afraid, sir.
Don't be silly. Come on. It certainly is dark in here. Pick up your feet, Moreau. I'll flash this light about. What was that?
The door. Oh, the stone door. Oh, Mustafa has closed. See, we are shut in. Oh, we are buried alive. Oh, preserve us.
Mustafa.
Open up. Open up, I say. Mustafa Bey, I'll kill you for this. It's no use. The stone door is in place. It looks as if you were right, Moro. We are buried alive.
You have found Follow
me too, my friend. Enjoy it. Oh, my man. The camel. We call. We are as good as dead, sir. Oh, I warn you.
Yes. It looks like curtains for us, Moro. Strange how that stone was moved back and Mustafa being here. I'll bet he opened it with the intention of locking us in to die.
Oh, no, sir. Mustafa afraid of evil spirit. He did not do it.
Well, I may as well look round. There's the sarcophagus of Ptolemy Ray. Isn't it beautiful? Smell the musk and spices. And the dust. Oh.
It is getting warm. Oh, we will soon stop breathing.
Yes. The oxygen will soon be exhausted.
Look, sir. See? The cover! It is moving!
Good heavens. It came from that sarcophagus. By Jove, that cover is moving. Well, I'm going to see what's inside.
Oh, no, no!
Listen! There are no evil spirits. When the top of a mummy case moves, there is something physically alive in there. It may be a rat, but I'm going to see.
You brave man, sir. I keep close, even to death.
That's the idea, Moro. Well, here goes. I'll pull it off.
Oh, it's alive! The mummy is alive! Oh, Allah! Allah!
So it is. A living mummy. But this mummy is a beautiful girl. She's rousing. She's sitting up. Her eyes are open.
Please. Oh, please do not ask me, monsieur.
A French girl. Who are you? What are you doing in the sarcophagus? And where is the mummy?
Mummy? Oh, I found no mummy. When I escaped from Mustafa Bey while he was camping here, I saw the door of this tomb open and I ran in. I was afraid he might enter to search for me, so I climbed in here and pulled the cover over me.
You say you escaped from Mustafa Bey? Why?
He captured me from my uncle's caravan. Oh, I dread the fate I knew was ahead of me, and I would rather die in here than... Oh, I must change.
Yes, I see. But I still can't fathom how that stone door came to be open.
It's getting hot. I am stifling. Can we not leave here?
What's your name?
Sonia.
I'm sorry, Sonia. Mustafa Bey has closed the door, and we are buried alive. Oh, we must be brave.
We have to die in these tombs. I do not want to die. I do not want to die.
There, there. We must be brave.
Oh, Master, if I may hold your hand. And I do. It will help me to wait for death.
I'll prop this flashlight so the light won't leave us.
Master, that shadow on the wall, it is moving.
Wait, while I turn this light. By Jove, it is moving. Looks like a huge human form.
It's an evil spirit. I shoot.
Stop. Give me that gun. Whatever it is moving toward the stone door. Yes, it's climbing down.
Yes, it is alive. It must breathe. He must know how to get out.
You're right, Sonia. There it is. It's pushing against the door. It's an ape. A huge ape.
An ape? Yes, it is. It is a sacred ape.
Shh, quiet. He's searching for a certain stone. He seems to be weak. Guess it's hard for him to breathe in here.
Hurry. Hurry, old man, or we won't last to enjoy our freedom. Hurry! Hurry!
Oh! He's found it! He's moving it! The stone door is moving! We're free!
The door is open, and he's gone. Oh! Breathe that wonderful air, Moro. Can you get out? Sonia has fainted.
Yes, Master. I am all right.
Come then. Let's get out of here as fast as we can.
Oh,
the sun again. The beautiful sun, Sonia. Sonia, we are free.
The sun. Oh, we are saved if Mustafa Bey does not come back.
He's gone. For good, I hope. Look, the ape is swinging joyously from tree to tree in the grove.
Monsieur. You have saved my life. I am grateful.
Thank the ape. Much obliged, old fellow. May you live to a ripe old age.
quite a yarn. I was almost suffocating while you were telling the story, Mr. Manning.
The weirdest yarn I ever heard. But what became of Sonia, the living mummy?
How would you have it in, Mr. Chairman?
Why, I'd have you marry the girl. They always do.
And that's just what I did.
And now will you believe that a mummy can come to life? Well, listen again and be thrilled by another strange adventure in a strange land.
Intro, this almost came to a 10-minute story, and I think they did a lot with the time they had.
Yeah, the one problem I had with stories is we just happened upon this Egyptian grave, you know, like they wandered the desert for 30 years and just happened upon an open Egyptian grave. Really? Come on. That's the only bit that, why not say they've been looking for it for so many weeks or something like that when they finally found signs of it or something like that. But all in all, I mean, the production was amazing. The music sounded almost like a movie soundtrack, especially for 32. You know, it was I'm not sure if they just used canned music or an actual orchestra, but I thought that was pretty amazing for 1932.
It was very amazing when we've talked about it here, how, you know, some programs had nothing but the use of an organ for their music. And, you know, it's to some effect, some of those are really good, but you can't beat a full orchestra like that.
No, yeah, it is really hard to beat. I mean, the old organs are fun, but when you have the whole orchestra and you're setting the mood, is, I guess you could mess it up, but... I don't think it did there. To me, it sounds like something that was done much later than 32, but that's to their credit. You know, I think that's to their credit.
Yep. Well, I guess that's one thing we learned. And here's another. Erie House Radio proudly presents On a Tireless, moral of the story.
Apologies, Tagar. If you ever find yourself trapped in an old Egyptian tomb, you should always follow your mummy. There you go. Exactly. Exactly.
There we go.
Hey, before we get into our next show, I have four more safe Dave facts, mummy facts, Dave facts.
I thought you came up a little short yesterday. Good.
You did. I'm always coming up a little short, but I can only blame my banker for that. Mummy fact, tomb raiders in ancient Egypt suffered a terrible death if they were caught. They would have the soles of their feet beaten and then be publicly impaled on a sharp wooden stick. Dave fact. They should just made them watch a soccer game. That would have been punishment enough. Mummy fact. In ancient Egypt, it took about 40 days for a body to be mummified. During that time, the body lost 75% of its original weight due to the dehydrating effects of mummification. Day fact, and you thought the keto diet worked fast. Mummy fact, in ancient Egyptian embalmers often used beeswax to seal up the corpse's mouth, nasal passage, and other cavities. Day fact, which is why we'll forever say none of your beeswax. And mummy fact, in ancient Egypt, embalmers were seen as both doctors and members of the priestly class. Day fact, in present times, they're known as IRS agents. Okay. One more set, but that'll come after, all the way through the WCRS radio stage we're about to share.
There is a website called.
Oh, go ahead.
There is a website, Dave, called Den of Geek. Den of Geek. And they list 13 essential mummy movies. Before we get into our next show, I thought I'd share that. This is one I forgot about. Number 13, Blood from the Mummy's Tomb from 1971.
Okay.
It's another Hammer. It's another Hammer flick. Number 12, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. We talked about that yesterday, huh, Dave?
Yep, take your pick.
The Mummy's Hand, which was the first sequel to the Karloff Mummy, came out in 1940 with Tom Tyler as the mummy.
Okay.
All right. Number 10, this is essential, Wrestling Women versus the Aztec Mummy. 1964.
I guess it's essential if you want to know one of the really bad mummy movies, I guess.
I guess so. Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, 1964. Same guy who brought us number 13 earlier. Okay. Number 8, Los Monstruos del Terror, a.k.a., or also known as, Dracula versus Frankenstein. 1970. A really bad movie. Monster Squad, 1987. Okay, that's where they had like a Gill creature, Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, and the Mummy. Very good.
Yeah.
The Mummy Shroud, 1967. I forgot about that one. Lon Chaney in The Mummy's Tomb is number 5 from 1942. The Mummy, 1999. That's, of course, with Brendan Fridger.
Yeah.
The 1959 Mummy, 1959, with Christopher Lee, is listed as number 3. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about this. Dave, have you ever seen Bubba Ho-Tep?
No.
God. It's Bruce Campbell, no less, and he plays Elvis, like after he died, but he's not really dead. And Bubba Ho-Tep is this mummy that's after him for some reason. It's weird. He ends up in old folks' home.
That's number 2.
That's number 2 must see mummy movies, and of course number 1, 1932, The Mummy. With Boris Karloff. So there you go. Thank you, Dennis G, for your wonderful list.
You know what I find hearing that list? I didn't realize the second mummy movie was 8 years after the original one.
Yeah, it took him a while to come back around to the mummy. I don't think he got the punch that some of the other Universal monsters did.
I think there was a certain amount of sympathy for the Wolf Man and for the Frankenstein monster himself. As far as Dracula goes, I don't think he had a certain amount of sympathy, but he was more sympathetic of a character. He was living dead being the way that he wasn't of his choice. But the mummy, there never has been a sympathy for the mummy.
Well, he was caught doing something wrong, and they ripped out his tongue and everything.
Right, right. Yeah, that's not very sympathetic.
Fooling around with one of the pharaoh's chicks, I think. Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So that'll teach him. And then, of course, he wanted to bring her back, too, once he got back through someone else. A living person. Not a cool plan. Oh, and then Bruce Campbell did another movie, and I forget the title of it, which has a mummy and named Guanji. It's like a Chinese mummy.
Okay.
And he plays himself, trying not to be himself, but being himself like from the movies. It's kind of weird.
Ah, yeah, that would be a bit unique there. That's a neat website, neat listing there of the top mummy movies that you should see.
Yeah, we'll wait. No, no, we won't. We have great radio to share. Dave, tell us, please, all about WCRS Soundstage.
Interesting, you know, how when I was looking up there and it said that Louise Alcott had written one of the first mummy stories. However, when I looked it up and looked up Poe, actually Poe predated hers by 20 years. The Poe story, some words with a mummy, dated back 20 years before that in 1848. And I've always thought, you know, even before this, if that was not one of the first mummy come to life stories, it was one of the first by an American author. As far as I could see, this may be one of the very first stories of a mummy come to life. We did update it a little bit. Well, we updated it a lot when we presented it here because we had some electrical things that we could do that which we certainly weren't around in 1848. But really made for an interesting story, and we got a wonderful cast together for this to present our own The Mummy Speaks, an adaption of Edgar Allan Poe's Some Words with a Mummy.
Good stuff. Okay, here's when were these first released, Dave?
This story was first aired May 25th, 2003.
Ooh, here's part one.
From great stories to tales of intrigue, we present WCRS Radio Stage. Join us as we take you on a journey to the center of your imagination. Today's drama by David Crawford and David Binkley is based on a story by Edgar Allan Poe. That sound tells us there's only 15 seconds to curtain time, so get comfortable in your chair as we go to Studio X and WCRS Radio Stage presents The Mummy Speaks. Where mummies are brought back to life after a 2,000-year slumber. But the story you are about to hear is inspired by one of the earliest mummy stories ever written, and certainly the first written by an American writer, Mr. Edgar Allan Poe, in 1845.
Hard to believe the words of Dr. Denton. The whole program is virtually an entrapment. It is not even related to our work. It is not fair.
It's about ethics, the latest hot subject to entertain the money handlers. I am a scientist who needs funding for my work. Money shouldn't be tied to my participation in some pseudo-ethics policy development. I have tenure and I really...
Please, for a moment, Jerry. Oh, Alex, would you kindly bring me another glass of peanut?
Why did you bring him over here? Well, as I was saying, I don't believe anyone with tenure should be regarded as...
Hey, kiddo, here's your wine. And speaking of wine, what are you whining about, Dr. Doolittle? Aren't you worn out by now? This symposium's coming to an end, and you're still harping about the same crap you did the first day. You act more like a bureaucrat than an Egyptologist.
I'm not an Egyptologist. I'm a tenured, internationally known archaeologist. A dedication solely to Egyptology isn't an archaeological science. It's a pathological condition, a cerebral visitation, dementia, scholastica. Later, my dear.
Oh, my dear Alex, I think you had one martini too many for lunch. You really need to be more respectful to Dr. Shelley. He is an influential man, and you would be wise to seek his favor.
Oh, he's an ass. What's he really done in the last 20 years? You know, screw his tenure.
Alex, now who is the one whining? Shut up and tell me what's up with you tonight. A group of us are heading over to the hotel across the street for a party after this affair ends up. Would you please join me?
No, I appreciate the offer, but this whole symposium has been nothing but a major brain drain. I'm beat. I'm heading back to my room, ordering a steak. I'm going to drown this headache out with a pitcher of martinis and settle in for a long overdue sleep. By the way, what time's your presentation tomorrow?
Without excessive delay, I hope to speak at 1 o'clock. You are going to attend, Alex. Alex?
Sure, you know I'll be there, but I'm looking forward to sleeping till noon. Unless you have some better sleeping arrangements.
Oh, wouldn't that put me in a great shape for my lecture? Maybe next time, huh?
If I offer, you know I'm not good at rejection.
My dear Alex, that's not what I hear.
Cut down in the prime of my life again. I'll see you tomorrow.
At 1 o'clock.
At 1.
Taxi!
Where to go, mister?
I'm staying at the Hotel Agathos.
That's where you go?
Just please take me there. I'm Alexander Baylor. With a doctorate in Egyptology, I specialize in the study of the Old and the Middle Kingdoms of Egypt. Not from the historical standpoint, but as an analyst of Egyptian technology. I guess you'd say I work better in a physics or a chem lab than on a relics dig. It might appear that I'm just an old curmudgeon. Well, maybe I am. For as long as I can remember, I've always been just a bit out of sync with the rest of the world. Most men consume and observe, and I've always wanted to create and participate. I fantasize about ruling with Hagi Sophs or dueling over the passion of a queen with Amenemhat III. It's as if I should be living in another time or place. Maybe that's why I've buried myself in Egypt these last 10 years, if you'll pardon the pun. I know I shouldn't have been so mean to Jerry, but I've been in the trenches and he rides his high horse across our backs. Allah, I thought you blessed hard work. Well, I need to unwind and get some rest.
Sir, this be your destination.
Here, keep the change.
Thank you ever so much, kind sir.
J. Pimpidel Basu.
Good evening, Dr. Bailey.
I trust
you. Yeah. Ah, that steak is tasting good already. I think it's time to hop in the old sarcophagus. Hello?
Wake up, you sleeping fool. Hurry, we're waiting for you.
What in the name of Tut is this?
Dear friend, you must come at once. Our efforts have at last come to fruition. The directors at the National Museum have given us permission to examine the mummy. It's the one you know so well. It's been delivered to the laboratory, and we shall begin to unroll it tonight at 11 p.m. Please hurry.
I can't believe it. The son of a gun really did it. I'd only been asleep for about an hour, but now I was instantly wide awake, leaping from my bed as I dressed quickly, rushing giddy like a child on Christmas morn. The mummy was an extraordinary find. It was one of a pair discovered by a cousin of Ponner at a tomb near Olathius. The tomb was rich in illustrations, statues, faces, intricate mosaic work. The mummy had been delivered 8 years ago to the National Museum. Ponner petitioned, he pleaded, he begged to be the principal examiner. I never thought it would happen. I need to think again about the virtue and perseverance. Arriving at the laboratory, I found Ponner's three staff members. Ponner's cousin Sabotage, and wouldn't you know it, my good old friend Dr. Schleich.
Where have you been, man? Our visitor here has waited more than four millennia for this day.
I don't think another 20 minutes will anger him, Ponner. Damn. This is incredible.
Well, let's get down to business now.
The wood sarcophagus was almost 7 feet long, 4 feet wide, and 3 feet deep. It was sycamore wood, finely illustrated with cut stones, funeral scene paintings, and hieroglyphic characters.
Dr. Schleich, are you able to translate this writing?
It's purely phonetic. Alamastakio. Tajati. Gentlemen, we have the honor of being in the presence of a nobleman. I believe you might say he holds the title of a lord.
The sarcophagus was carefully opened, revealing a second more ornate case. And again, the second case was opened, revealing a third. The excitement was like a thick cloud enveloping all of us.
This is it, my friends. Ah, quite remarkable.
Surprise! The body was not heavily wrapped in gauze. But after carefully removing the first two layers, we discovered a colored plaster and papyrus sheath studded with semi-precious jewels and gold foil. Carefully stripping back the sheath revealed a body covered from head to toe with a soft tar-like substance. We all looked silently in total astonishment.
Asphaltium. It's asphaltium. Excellent condition. Look how well preserved. The gilded nails. The absence of gross dehydration.
Slowly, Dr. Schleich removed the tar-like coating from around the midriff and from part of the head and neck. The air was filled with an intoxicating odor of ancient spices.
Gentlemen.
Oh, I'm lost.
This is most unusual.
The organs have not been removed. No incisions. We have a fully intact mummy here.
Jerry was correct. The organs are normally removed and stored near the body in ceramic or glass containers. I glanced down at my watch. It was 3 a.m. With a lack of sleep and martinis, I should have been in slumberland. But the excitement over our guests was shared by us all. We were electrified, empowered by Ra.
Gentlemen, it is quite late. May I suggest we meet here at 10 a.m.? Thank you for sharing this honor with me.
Dr. Ponner, would you like a hand putting this guy back in the chamber?
I'll offer my hand, too.
Thank you. Thank you both. The organs are intact. A rare find indeed. Pardon me, please, gentlemen.
Let's x-ray our friend here.
What are you talking about?
An x-ray. Let's set up the fluoroscope. It's the exposure to the air. You know, we don't know whether or not there's going to be deterioration in the organs before morning. We should examine him now.
Gentlemen, I admire your enthusiasm, but I have an early meeting. You may conduct the imaging if you wish. I will advise security you will be here tonight, but I must leave.
Fine. I will get this done ASAP, and we'll see you in the morning.
We'll be seeing you in the morning. I'm staying. I'm certain you'll need assistance.
Good night again, gentlemen.
Jerry, help me set this up. I have some work to do.
We have work to do.
I'm just about ready, Jerry. In the name of Kali, get that lead apron on, or are you already a sterile cuckoo?
I had to turn on the cooling pump, you idiot. Remember, my dear colleague, Kali, the goddess of vengeance, strikes of her own volition and power, and no human hands are needed to assist her in her acts of justice. Just get started.
Well, here goes nothing.
My God! The organs are intact! Look sharp now. God damn!
My God! Did you see it?
I just got the hell shocked out of me, you idiot! Shut it down! You forgot the grounding strap to the tape?
No, did you see it? Did you see he moved? The mummy moved!
Ah! Shut it down! I saw it! Get the TENS unit now!
Jerry was angry at my oversight, but surprise and enthusiasm overrode that anger. The static discharge from the fluoroscope had indeed induced movement in the mummy. We hurried and made incisions to place TENS electrodes in the black, tarred body. Would electrical stimulation reproduce the same effect as the static discharge from the fluoroscope?
The incisions on the left leg placed the primary electrode over the muscle belly of the gastric and the secondary on the glutei. Set the TENS at 100 volts, 30 milliamps. Switch on. Ow! Yes! My God!
The movement exceeded life-likeness. The mummy drew up its leg and in a violent movement struck Jerry in the chest and hurled him into the dissection cart.
And that's where we'll pick it up in just a little bit. Neat, kind of a Frankenstein mummy, sort of. Nice.
Yeah, in a sense, using the electricity, yeah, 2003 fogs, yes, exactly. I wasn't real happy with how it was sounding on my phone. I turned it, the computer speaker on, and the sound was a little bit better than what I'm hearing over my phone. But yeah, it's, we shocked the heck out of this guy, and he kicked the one doctor right in his good old stomach there. Knocked him back.
In his stomach, eh?
Well, he wasn't a tenor, and so it must have been the stomach.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a
good, scary tale.
Interesting portrayal there. I'm hearing the voices of Bob Holland, who's still a volunteer for the service. Jim Pecci had been out on a long illness. He battled cancer, but it sounds like he's doing better now. Dave Crawford, who is the main character here, who is the co-writer on this and also the co-writer along with his brother-in-law of the music that we used here, he's passed away. So my co-conspirator on all of these stories that we did, gone on. I guess he was talking to his wife a couple of days before he passed. Said, "Boy, I sure wish we could do a few more of those radio plays." He always loved these radio plays. Had I not had his encouragement, and first he just came on as being able to help bring music for me, and before you knew it, he was voicing and bringing in other people to act in it and such like that. And he was all around. He was truly a complete part of this series of stories that we did. And
now, Dave, you've been involved in a few of their productions, haven't you?
Of whose productions?
with WCRS?
A few, yeah. I've only been there for like 40 years now, and Weirdness Radio started there. I've gotten a full handful of from different venues. We did get one for radio station. We've gotten some national and state awards for many of the programs that I've worked on, from the documentaries to the radio stages to we did a lot of some interesting interviews and things like that. We've gotten a lot of attention over some of the programs that we've done over the years. And, 40 years
I've been
messing with this radio gig thing. And, so CRS stood for Written Communications Radio Service. Originally, we were the Tri-County Radio Reading Service. They expanded when KSU expanded to cover more than three counties. That's when we became WCRS. And now with becoming part of Goodwill, we are WEYE, Goodwill of Goodwill Industries of Akron. So they did save the service from going black. And with my many disagreements with them, I'll always be grateful that they saved the service. How's that?
There you go. There you go. And I believe we also Erie House can be heard there as well.
That's right. We have hour-long narrowing down, hour-long versions, and we're about close to 125 of those episodes in, Dale, on top of all the shows that we've done here. So we're all over the place.
Yep. Yep. And this is a great story, Dave. I am glad you brought this one here today. We've got some more mummy chatting to do as well. And who knows? Maybe we'll spin the wheel if we have time. I think we will. Here's the exciting conclusion of The Mummy Speaks.
The movement exceeded life likeness. The mummy drew up its leg and in a violent movement struck Jerry in the chest and hurled him into the dissection cart. Our excitement could not be contained. For the first time in our careers, Jerry and I were working together, sharing a common goal. Jerry was the expert here, and I yielded quickly to his orders. I quickly made an incision at the mummy's occipital protrusion and inserted an electrode. Two more electrodes with the opposite polarity were placed on each temporal lobe.
Switch on!
Morally and physically, figurative and literally, the effect was electric. In the first place, the corpse sat up, opened its eyes, and blinked for several minutes. Both Jerry and I were quite shaken. The mummy slowly raised its fist and shook it in Jerry's face. Then, in very capital Egyptian, he spoke.
Inta Saji Fox.
That I might speak, that you might understand. Do you understand?
Akati.
I understand.
A teten kati teten swang. Gentlemen, I am Lord Alamastekio. Your vile behavior surprises me as much as mortifies me. Of Dr. Ponner, nothing better was to be expected. He is a poor little fat fool who knows no better. I pity him. But you two gentlemen who have traveled and resided here in Egypt until one might imagine you men are born, you two have studied, written, and spoken my ancient tongue. You who I have been led to regard as a firm friend of the mummies. Dr. Baylor, Dr. Schleich, I did so anticipate better conduct from you. You stand before me in silence with faces of stone, gawking at my appearance. What am I to think when you rob my place of rest, open my sarcophagus, strip me of my clothes, and cut into my naked body in such a cold, wretched climate?
The mummy's exceedingly natural and matter-of-fact style had erased all terror. Our indignant laughter had completely disarmed our poor, cold, asphalt-stained friend. As we regained our composure, the mummy glared with a severe countenance for several minutes.
Did you not hear my words? Are you men of science or men of war? Have I been stripped from my place of rest for your joy or destructive folly? By Ishtar, I pray thee to make right the deeds perpetrated tonight.
Apologies were tendered from all present, and the mummy nodded, expressing himself satisfied.
You are still here? It's almost 9 a.m., gentlemen. I decided to stop by before my meeting. In the name of Ra, you have been busy.
He's falling!
I got him. Bonner was aghast at the sight of the mummy sitting up with his legs hanging over the edge of the metal examination table. We pulled him to his feet as he quietly chuckled and smiled with childish delight.
Yes, you have been busy. Very busy.
Sir, you must allow me to explain how I was able to...
Enough. Hausen, Wise, well, wait. Gentlemen, our friend has been wounded by our exuberance, our curiosity, and bumbling fingers. Dr. Schleich, would you mind effecting repairs on the wounds? There's a full complement of needles and suture material in that drawer on your right. Dr. Baylor, please assist Dr. Schleich.
Oh, I'm quite sure Jerry would be more than thrilled to assist me.
And I believe you will find asphaltic compound and a hot oil bath in which to melt it in that cabinet there.
Yes?
Umram, all meetings and classes are canceled today. Have security restrict all access to my laboratory and office area.
As you wish, Director Ponner.
Dear colleagues, I will return shortly with whatever garments I might find to warm and embellish the mummy's appearance. Proceed quickly with the repairs.
You are shivering. Allow me to cover, well, at least part of you with this tarp to keep you warm as we work. Sir, I must ask you to forgive my ignorance, but you refer to yourself as a lord. Would you please elaborate?
I've read the... My dear Dr. Baylor, the Egyptian title of Tajadi was on the sarcophagus. It is equivalent to a vizier or lord. I really thought you, as an Egyptologist, knew that the title had been present from the beginning of the pharaonic period. Remember Imhotep, who was the lord of Djoser during the Third Dynasty. Ah, cover his legs now until I get these torso cuts sutured. Lord Alamastakio, once the asphaltic melts and is applied, you will feel much warmer.
Yes, that is better.
We both worked quickly, suturing and painting the hot, black, tarry asphalt over the cuts and damaged areas we had inflicted on the mummy. First the torso, then the legs and feet, finally finishing with the head and neck area.
Gentlemen, I have returned.
Excellent timing. With Dr. Schleich's assistance, we've almost...
Yes, with Dr. Baylor's help, I have nearly completed the repairs on Lord Alamastakio.
Enough, gentlemen. Please assist me in dressing our guest.
Ponner was my mentor in Egyptology. I now realize his forte was undressing mummies and not the other way around. I almost choked as I held back my laughter. Ponner quickly removed from the bag a long black dress coat, then slid on a pair of striped sky blue silk pajama pants that looked like they came from the clown tent of a Barnum and Bailey circus. And then, to balance out the wardrobe, there was a bright pink chemise blouse, a gold brocade vest, a red bowler hat, and a brown walking cane. We went to work carefully dressing the Lord Alamastakio.
You finally give me the honor that I, Lord Alamastakio, am due.
It is our honor, Akati.
Akati!
Lord Alamastakio, allow me to offer you a place of honor beside the fireplace in my office.
To be warm.
Our quartet slowly moved to the elevator and went up two floors to the private entrance of Dr. Ponner's office. Surprisingly, Lord Alamastakio seemed unimpressed at our modern technology and enthralled by his colorful garb.
Ah, now, please, Lord Alamastakio, take my chair. Gentlemen, draw up a chair to the fireplace.
I thank you. At last I feel warm.
This is truly a celebration. Allow me to pour wine.
The wine was poured, and soon it fueled candid conversation.
Lord Alamastakio, I should have thought it was high time you were dead.
Jerry, shut up.
I am little more than 700 years old. My father lived over 1,000 years and was by no means afflicted by a numbing of the mind or senses.
I beg your pardon, my lord, but we accurately date your entombment to the catacombs of Eliphias, having been 5,050 years and some months ago.
This is not...
What we are at a loss to understand is that you have been dead and buried over 5,000 years. Yet today you are here with us, looking so delightfully well.
Had I been, as you say, dead, wouldn't I surely be dead today? You are infantile in your science. Are you not familiar with our embalming?
Well, somewhat, but we're still learning.
What a deplorable condition of ignorance. I will be brief, lest I overburden and damage your puny intellect.
No, please. Please continue.
Embalming allowed my culture to arrest and hold, in perpetual suspension and preservation, all the animal functions associated and subjected to the process. Whatever your condition at the time of embalmment, in that condition you remained. I was of the race of the Scarabaeus. We did not adhere to the custom of removing the bowels and brain from the corpse before embalmment. Had I not been Scarabaeus, I would not now be before you. Without bowels or brains, it is most inconvenient to live. I was in a coma and being thought dead, embalmed alive. Thus, I now stand before you whole.
The wine flowed, and conversation continued through the early hours. Our guest's arrogance soon sparked a debate of societal superiority.
Our deplorable condition of ignorance, my lord, has changed the face of the planet in ways you have never dreamed. The Nile River was conquered by our society. The Great Suez Canal and the Aswan Dam are just a few examples of the greatness of the magnificent structures our society has created. Look at our architecture, New York, the skyscrapers, and the great cathedrals of Europe.
Your buildings are merely ugly boxes reaching for the clouds. As fragile as the blossoming lilies, they collapse upon themselves by the mere breath of Ra. We are the architects for the gods, the great pyramids of Giza, and those not yet uncovered will remain intact long after your civilization has returned to the dust from which it was created.
But we are no longer earthbound. Our eyes are turned to the stars, no more feet of clay. We sail into the heavens with man-made wings.
Yes, you seek the stars, but the stars came to my people, and we still hold many of their secrets.
Please, may we take time later to review our accomplishments in medicine? Unlike your society, my lord, our science allows us to look inside the body just as we did yours without harm. We have the ability to transplant organs from one man to another. We are now beginning to manufacture body parts for transplant. Your ideas of life suspension are crude compared to the future advances yet to come from our medical scientists. We have cured the diseases that killed many of your people. We daily move ahead in our discovery of new ways to extend life and improve the quality of it.
What good is your medicine when we lived for hundreds of years without it? You are a victim of your own technology. It is your lust for it that makes you ill.
The morning continued on, with question following debate and argument following each question. There were a plethora of subjects discussed, from the spiritual to the scientific to the profane. From the sublime to the ridiculous. The arguments of those who had a superior culture would not stop. I began to grow weary. The three of us were exhausted from the excitement and lack of sleep. But our guest was fresh from a several thousand year nap. We were now in imminent danger of losing the argument. But as good would have it, Dr. Ponner came to the rescue.
Lord Alamastakio, if I may inquire, would your people seriously consider their manner of dress, the fashion, in rivalry with our culture?
Lord Alamistakeo slowly removed his red bowler hat and gazed down across the gold brocade vest at the sky-blue silk pajama pants. His bony fingers gently stroked the bright pink chemise blouse. Not a word spoken. The mummy slowly raised his head, and there appeared a sheepish grin that eventually spread from ear to ear. There we stood victorious, in hand a bittersweet victory. With all the scientific wonders we offered Lord Alamistakeo, the only appreciation he had for our society's accomplishments came from the bright colors and the soft fabric of a pair of mismatched pajamas. My eyes could no longer bear the spectacle of the mummy's modification. I bid adieu and left for home. It's almost 4 p.m., and I think it's best for me to sleep. Or should I remain awake? I am sick of my life in today's world, and I see that I belong here no more than I would have 2,000 years ago. My family, my friends, even the foreseen future causes my heart to ache. Everything seems wrong. What lies ahead for me? Maybe I should just step over to Dr. Ponner's office and get embalmed. Is that where I belong?
Today's program featured David Crawford as Alex, Jim Pesci as Jerry, Bob Holland as Dr. Ponner, and Robert Quaid as the Mummy. Also appearing were Umran Kelker, Jesse Pedigo, and David Lloyd. The Mummy Speaks was written by David Crawford and David Binkley and was adapted from the Edgar Allan Poe story, Conversations with a Mummy. Original music was performed by Tom Holman. This program is produced in Akron, Ohio by David Binkley and David Crawford. I'm Joe Calley, asking you to join us the next time we open the curtain on WCRS Radio Stage.
Nice work, Dave. Nice work.
You know, I got to thinking, listening to Robert Quaid be the mummy there. He was also a volunteer at the service. He had a deep, rich, James Earl Jones type voice he had there. And at one point, he was reading the Beacon Journal death notices. And Dave Lloyd walked by, stopped with a horrified look on his face, and said, "Oh my God, it's death." But I mean, he was just a guy that worked in quality control in an area shop, and was volunteering at the service, and they kind of drafted him for a few of the different radio plays we had. It was it's amazing the talented people that I've been able to come across and been able to to work with over the years.
Well, Dave, you come up with some of the best. Who knows? Even news people.
Yeah, he was. And he did. He truly enjoyed any of the work that he did with that Foggs. So it sounded like he really enjoyed the mummy voice work too. And it was. And he was just a very neat guy. As far as I know, he's still with us. I haven't heard from Robert in quite a few years here. So, but that's just part of the story which we have with the radio stage.
I'll keep bringing those back here. That was a nice surprise, and obviously our listeners think so too. Some nice comments there in the chat. Thank you, fellas. Truly was amazing. Looks like we got a little bit of time left. If you care, give us a call at 646-378-0264. Maybe you'd like to give the wheel a spin and see what kind of random radio rarities we can come up with. Number again, 646-378-0264. Dial carefully.
That's right. Otherwise, you end up calling China, and that's not on anybody's plan as far as I know.
I don't know. There's another website here, Movies Order, listing mummy movies in order. But it seems like they completely omitted any of the Mexican films. They strictly Universal, Hammer, and the Mummy trilogy that recently came out. They start, of course, with 1932, The Mummy. The Mummy's Hand, The Mummy's Tomb, The Mummy's Ghost, The Mummy's Curse. Abbott and Costello meet The Mummy. And then 1959, that's when Hammer starts getting them. The Hammers were standalone films where I think the Universal films, we had one mummy keep coming back more and more and more. And the three Brendan Fraser movies, and then, of course, now the Tom Cruise film that came out in 2017, I have not yet seen.
I have not seen that either, right? The fact is, you get an opinion about Tom Cruise, but he actually does a good job with the movies. It just the Mission Impossible and the even the War of the Worlds, that was actually probably a lot closer to the, in many ways, the H.G. Wells story than was the one in the movies, which is a great story. I'm not saying it's wrong or bad. I'm just saying it was probably a little closer to the actual H.G. Wells story than the one from the 50s. So,
I would tend to agree that that was a very very close to the novel. One of my favorite all-time science fiction stories in general, and it's been retold so many times. And the Tom Cruise version wasn't too bad as far as entertainment value.
I was not expecting it. I was sitting with a friend of mine who was ill at the time, and he wanted to see it, and I didn't really want to, because I just feel it's so cheap to have remakes when people could be making more original things, is what I feel, instead of just trying to remake something that everyone else has done or that has been done before and done well. And I was pleasantly surprised by the movie. I was.
Well, Dave, I think maybe it's your turn.
I think it was. I think you gave it a jerk yesterday, so I'm the jerk that pulls it today. So I'm going to reach up to the top and give it a nice big tug.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Himself, the whole thing.
We're sitting here doing nothing. We have to watch it yet. Well, I told you we could turn on something else. Look, I'm not interested in the finals of the West Covina bowling matches. Women's division.
Oh, I don't know. Those women bowlers got very nice muscles.
Oh. You know, we could have put on something else. There's an old movie, Whoopi, with you in it.
Whoopi? I don't want to see that. When I watch how I used to roll my eyes in those days, it hurts me now.
Now, Eddie, I know how you feel. You know, it's like a fat man stepping on a weighing machine and getting a card that says, you used to weigh 150 pounds.
Well, I don't know. I look in the mirror every day, and I haven't changed one bit in the last 20 years. George, I keep telling you, that is not a mirror, that is a photograph.
How about that, Vern? He gets us on. He tells everybody. Tells the whole world what great friends we are. What great pals.
Yeah, that's right.
Then he takes over the whole show and he gets all the glory.
Yeah. And the prestige.
And the girls. And the money.
and top billing. And the girls.
And the money.
Okay, fellas, there must be another line here, huh?
And the money.
And the girls. Oh, shut up, folks.
Look, he begged me to come on, didn't he?
Sure.
Yeah, he begged me to come on.
Sure.
And then he says, anything you could, you do anything you want to do, I'll be the straight man. That's what he said.
Well, of course. What else can he be but a straight man? Take the cigar away from Burns, and what do you got? A very old Bobby Darin.
You're right. You know, he repeats everything you say, just like every other straight man. Now, the other day I saw him on the street, and I says to him, George, how's your brother Willie? So he says to me, how's my brother Willie? Then I had to think of a funny answer. Sometimes you can stand like that for days.
It started in school, you know, when he was a kid. Nobody knew how dumb he was. The teacher would say to him, who invented the steamboat? And he'd say, who invented the steamboat? And while he was waiting for the teacher to get her laugh, the other kids graduated.
And the worst of it is he makes us do things that we did 20 years ago. Yeah. Who wants to do things we did 20 years ago?
I do.
Boy, how did you show up?
George, you were just great.
You were magnificent.
I could hear you sing forever. You don't need anybody.
Yeah. Well, I knew you'd love it. Look, fellas, I'm going out to introduce the pals number.
Yeah.
Now, when we sing together, it's my show. So please, don't sing too loud.
How do you like that? Don't sing too loud. How do you like that? And we're doing this whole show for free. I'm not getting a dime. Are you getting paid, George?
Well, of course not. How about you, Jack? Are you getting paid?
Jack!
Wait a minute, I'm not through looking.
Jack. Jack, aren't you...
I can make this show run an hour and a half.
Jack, aren't you doing this show for nothing?
Well, practically. We just have an exchange of sponsors' products.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I give Burns, you know, a case of Lux Liquid.
Yes?
And he gives me a Mercury.
What? An exchange of products?
Wait a minute. I think I hear the music. Come on.
Jeff, if you please, pals.
Wait a minute, Jeff. Just a moment. George, I meant to ask you, how's your brother Willie?
How's my brother Willie?
Yes, George, how is your brother Willie?
Jack, how's my brother Willie?
I don't know. He's your brother.
Jack, the deal is off.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Pals, what you do is okay with me.
Let us alone.
Pals.
Just what is wrong with the girl of today is a problem this world has to face. They blame it on this and they blame it on that, but they don't seem to get any place. It isn't the lipstick, the cocktails, the jazz, the
corn.
It's the mother who says if you're not home,
and those four pals were Jack Benny, George Burns, Eddie Cantor, and Georgie Gessel.
Yeah, it's amazing because actually out of that, Jack and George really were best friends. And Georgie Gessel and Eddie Cantor going so many years together from really all the way from the Ziegfeld Follies through lifelong friendships, just as it was with Jack Benny and George Burns being neighbors and such. It just it's as much as they sounded competitive there, they competitive, maybe they were professionally, but all just really in it for each other as much as anything else. A wonderful, wonderful, funny segment. Everybody getting a chance to shine in that segment as well. Just fun little group. I think it was from about 1958 or 59. That was after Gracie had retired and George was still trying to find his niche. I don't think he found it until the Sunshine Boys in about 1968.
I watched, I think it was on Amazon. There was a special about Gracie that I watched recently about her retirement time. And she was ailing. She had a couple heart attacks. And of course, George survived her by many, many, many years.
When George was not ready to quit, she was, and she was hoping when their contract was up that CBS would just let the show go, and they didn't. George called her up and said, I've got some bad news. CBS renewed the contract, and she hung up on him. But she only lived...
It was an interesting story about her, Dave. As I know you know already that Gracie was anything but the ditz she portrayed.
Absolutely, yeah.
In fact, one could argue she made George Burns.
I don't think you'd get any argument out of that. George became... He didn't really have a... He would say, how's your sister, and would stand back for 20 minutes as Gracie would just go at it. Carol, we played an interview with him, and he was worked with George Burns on the show for many years, and he did not have the greatest opinion of Gracie and her ability to remember lines and things like that. There's a couple of times that she did, as things happen in life, and sometimes your life fits a bit that you've done. I know that Mike Mace and I have run into that from time to time, and we kind of run in and do that short bit when we're together and something like that happens. But he didn't have the great, but really she did make George Burns. George Burns loved entertaining, and he had, I don't know how many vaudeville partners before he finally matched up with Gracie, and she really did make him. At first, he was the one telling the jokes, and people weren't laughing. She told a joke, and everybody laughed. At that point, George, I tell you, he's a very smart man, and in order to make a career for himself, he became her straight man. And it was absolutely tremendous. They're actually the ones that introduced Fred Astaire to the movies. And if you go on YouTube and look up George Burns, Gracie Allen, Fred Astaire dance, there's a wonderful number that the three of them do where George was just about step for step it with Fred Astaire in that number.
Wow. Yeah, I guess Gracie did a lot of stuff. I mean, just not only the mock running for the presidency, she really did have a lot to do with the writing and the portrayal. She really was the funny one of the two.
Yeah, she was very protective of her character of being the ditz. And there were some times she said, "Look, that's not good for me. That makes me sound smarter than I am." And they would have to change it, because if she said she wasn't going to do it, she wouldn't do it anyway. So.
Yeah.
But she was very protective of that ditzy character that she played, whether it be on radio or television. She wasn't a bad little singer. She was good friends with the guy that wrote the Philo Vance murder mystery. As a matter of fact, he wrote one that was, I think, was only for the movies, the Gracie Allen murder case. And she actually appeared in that movie as well, now without George. I think she did a couple things without George, and certainly George ended up doing his things plenty of things without Gracie.
Yes. He did one thing and got caught. Bought her a $10,000 ring. But 8 or 9 years later, I guess Gracie was talking to a friend of hers, and she said, gee, I wish George would have another affair. I could use another ring.
Yeah.
But I guess that was his only dalliance. He loved her dearly. In fact, when he died, he knew he was going and stuff, and they were making plans for the family mausoleum. And, he said, I'll take the spot underneath Gracie. And they said, well, you know, usually the male patriarch is the highest level in the mausoleum. And he goes, nah, he says, I've been headlining for years. It was Burns and Allen, Burns and Allen. He says, let it be Allen and Burns.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. The original Going in Style movie that Lee Strasberg and George Burns and who else was in that wonderful movie. At one point, he was sitting in a chair reminiscing, going through his old albums, and he was looking at pictures of he and Gracie back in the day, just crying his eyes out. It was just
Bogsby mentioned his movie, Oh God, was a great movie.
Yes.
With John Denver.
And John Denver, it was a very fun movie. He liked the second one a lot more. There was a lot less humor in the second one. It was a lot more straightforward. But the first one with John Denver was absolutely wonderful. The third one was a waste of time, but he got paid good money for it. And I have three albums he cut in the late 70s to early 80s that he did stemming from when he hit I Wish I Was 18 Again and charted with it. Mercury signed him up for a three-album deal, and I have all three of those albums. So vinyl.
They need to kill me, because if they made an album of it, it seems that you have it.
I might.
Quite the audiophile, and I couldn't be teamed up with a better guy. It's so much fun bringing these radio programs like we do each and every week here at Erie House. Next week, we got some body snatching going on. That's right, we're kicking off August with some serious horror, with suspense, another Ripley's Believe It or Not, and a crime classic. That's just Friday. At 8:30, Blog Talk Willing. And then we bring back CBS Radio Mystery Theater with the Headstrong Corpse. You know, it's 8:58, and Blog Sucks still sucks.
Yeah, it could be. But you know what? We're able to share tonight and last night, and so... we're getting back to, things aren't quite back to normal, but they're getting there. How about that?
Yeah, it's almost normal as Erie House can be. But yeah, some really good body snatcher stories. And, we'll get into movies and things and maybe a little history, too, about body snatching. That's all
right,
next weekend.
I was just saying, Crime Classic.
All right, Bend the Vortex, Dave. Tell them.
Oh, we have the Weirdness Really Bad movie, and it is the Bulldog Drummond Comes Back.
That's at 9 o'clock tomorrow, Eastern. Is it 9? Yeah.
Yep, 9.
Well, that's German for no. Now I'm confused.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Gee, I should be confused more often.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
God,
I just found that clip on YouTube a few weeks ago and uploaded it. I loved it. I mean, Cantor and Jessel and Burns and Benny. Benny taking his time stealing the show, as always, you know.
Yep. Yeah, that was a fun one. I'm glad that got randomly picked.
Me too.
From the Wheel of Radio. Well, it's been a fun weekend. A little challenging on Friday night, but we got through that and moved it forward and still got two nights of great radio in there.
Yes, we did. And thank you for letting me share the radio stage. It was always fun to hear these again.
Well, Dave, I love it when you bring those. And clearly Fog's Bane liked it. I'm sure GGSI Paper liked it. He's been here for the whole show. And it's been a pretty cool weekend. You know, again, not my favorite monster of the classic Universals, but still a decent, you know, it's worth it. Once in a while, I'll go through all the Universal Mummy movies in order.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have George Zuko controlling the mummy in some of the
I like George Zuko. I think I've always enjoyed his portrayal in movies of many times the same type of character, but always gave everything he had, whether he was in an A or a B pitcher.
Yeah, and fortunately, he's been in a few of the public domain films that we've been able to use.
Yes.
Like The Flying Dragon and one or two more that I can think of offhand.
I also think Lionel Atwell was tremendous as well, and no matter what you put him in. He just gave it everything he had. Even though he didn't always or necessarily have a lead, he gave it everything he had.
That he did. And many movies he made with Fay Wray.
Yeah.
He was in three or four good horror films with her. The Vampire Bat, Mystery of the Wax Museum, a terror classic.
I have the Mystery of the Wax Museum. My wife had it, and she was going to take it to the exchange. And I have it sitting here. I just haven't watched it yet, and I need to sit down and watch that. It's sitting on DVD, sitting right in my case. I can see it right from here. I need to sit down and watch that one.
I keep trying to find lists of mummy movies. I really can't believe there's none from the silent era, but it does not appear there have been. Everybody seems to start it at 1932 with Boris.
And I don't know how many more stories there were, but we're talking about two, you know, from the mid 19th century, the 1800s there. And if there weren't any stories coming across from England, there really weren't that many mummy stories, period. I think it was the whole inception of that, the Universal did, that really brought the whole mummy idea to life.
Yeah. You know, like ancient Egypt's been used in subtext and maybe even mummies referenced, but maybe not necessarily the star of the show, as it were. For example, the second Dr. Fibes movie, when he travels to Egypt to find the river of eternal life. So you bring his wife back to life, sail off with her, you know, and there's a lot of it. Some of it takes place in Egypt, so.
Right, and a lot of movies that took place in Egypt didn't have to necessarily do with mummies coming back to life, but maybe a pharaoh's curse. One thing I'm thinking of Charlie Chan in Egypt. But there were more movies, as probably as many or more about Pharaoh's curses than there were about mummies.
Yeah. So, but still an interesting part of horror history, to be sure.
Absolutely.
But I found it surprising that you found that great story by Edgar Allan Poe, which, again, is probably one of the earliest mummy stories, at least, as you mentioned, by an American writer.
And I can't think of, I don't know of anyone else that actually kind of did an adaptation of that. We were maybe the first ones, and at this point still really one of the only ones to have adapted that for any media. And so that's kind of cool.
And yet you found us a bunch of radio. Cool.
But there was another poem one I wanted to do because I didn't think anybody had ever done it. The title was so intriguing. And then I found out that the CBS Radio Workshop did. It was Never Bet the Devil Your Head. The title itself was just enough to make me want to do that story.
Yes.
Now we played
that, didn't we, here?
We did. When we did the devil, you say, weekend. Since it was done, then I didn't really push harder on that. But if it had never been done, then that was one I might have really before now gone after and tried to redo. But
it's a good story.
As far as I know, they're the only ones that ever did a version of that story. So, well, just like we heard Watcher of the Living, we heard the Mystery Theater do Watcher of the Living, and up to that point, and I still think up to now, they're the only ones that have ever done a version of that H.G. Wells story in any medium.
Yeah.
And it's a neat story. I got to think of the first time I heard that. I said, how come I never heard of that story before?
Oh, I know. It's funny. Even the classics, there's authors, there's these side stories they have here that somehow get overlooked over the years, and they're actually quite good.
Conan Doyle did some wonderful, wonderful stories about Sherlock Holmes, but people didn't want to buy that. They wanted to buy Sherlock Holmes. Even after he killed him off. And he probably wrote the best story while Holmes was still dead. About Sherlock Holmes when he did the memoirs of Sherlock Holmes. And he did, that's when The Hound of the Baskerville came. So that was after he was all done writing those stories and said he wasn't going to do another one. Finally forced, not by the editor, but by public demand to bring back Sherlock Holmes. And when he did, he brought it back with one of the greatest Holmes stories of all of them, The Hound of the Baskervilles.
Amazing, because that's actually, at least the films with Basil, Hound of the Baskervilles was the first one released.
Yeah.
By Universal.
And that's the only one where Watson, although he did do a little bumbling when he ran into Holmes out in the moor, that's the only one where he wasn't a complete idiot. Which I do like. I mean, I love Nigel Bruce. And I enjoyed him as Watson, but he played him as such a bumbling idiot. He was a doctor. He was an army doctor. He wasn't a bumbling idiot. And that portrayal always bothers me. They turned Nigel Bruce into a comic a relief for that.
I have a guilty pleasure, Dave, in that bumbling character, though. I guess it's fond movies of watching the films from long ago. I watched so many of them before I read anything by Sir Arthur that Nigel Bruce's bumbling character just impressed itself on me, and I do have a guilty pleasure. I like him.
I'll tell you what. Coming up, we have one coming up. I'm not sure if I have it in the list yet. The one about releasing the hounds, and in that we have a Mystery Theater adaption of the Hound of the Baskervilles. And as Kevin McCarthy, and I forget the guy they have as Watson, to me, that's one of the finest portrayals of Watson I have ever seen or heard.
That'll be the very end of August.
Okay.
Scheduled that in.
When we get that in there, because I tell you what, that and of all the home stories, and they really made the Redhead League interesting. I loved how they did that. Kevin McCarthy, with his good old Canadian accent, did well for Sherlock Holmes, I thought. But that is indeed an absolutely amazing adaptation of the Conan Doyle story. So everybody look forward to that at the end of August, because, and if you're hearing this now after August, go back to the archives and listen to that. You will not be disappointed.
Yes, you must check it out. That, along with all the other great programming we've got coming up for you here on Erie House Radio. Thanks for listening in. I guess it's probably about time to wake up Mr. Durante.
Hey, Jimmy, it's time. Say good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and it could think it do. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.